This is from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 17. This is the punchline to a story of a man with an epileptic son who brings his son to the disciples for healing, and they can't do it. Plan B is to bring him to Jesus, who heals him. The disciples ask the question, "What's up with that?" And Jesus gives this answer. He says, "Truly I say to you, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from hence to yonder place,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." Faith as a grain of mustard seed will move mountains. There are a couple of different typical sets of meditations around this text. The first concerns the mountain. In some sense, diminishing the power of the mountains in our lives that block our progress or are barriers to our peace. And then there are other sermons that essentially tell God's good and gracious people, at least womp up enough faith, a mustard seed's worth, from within. In other words, get your act together at least that much, and maybe you'll make it work. I don't think either of those approaches are especially helpful, nor am I convinced they go to the heart of what Jesus is trying to say. I have an insight as to what the heart of Jesus' message is by having come late in my life to being in the company of two-year-olds. That ever happened to you? The terrible twos? Usually in some public place or somewhere similarly humiliating, they go into their act, and there's almost nothing you can do about it, except perhaps to say, use your words. Try to use your words to convey the emotions that are causing you to go nuts. If you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, and this is the point, you will say to the mountain, "Move from hence to yonder place," and it will move. It's in the words. Use your words. Words move mountains. Well, what words are those? What kind of magic words are you talking about? First, I'm talking about not just the words we say, but the words left unsaid. And I'm not even talking about the bad words. I'm talking about the words left unsaid when someone else is talking to you, especially when they're talking to you about something that is deeply meaningful, emotionally charged, and they want nothing from you except your attention. And how often, when that happens, do they get instead silence from us, but in our heads we're rehearsing what we're about to say next? There's a difference between listening and waiting for your turn to talk, especially if while you're waiting for your turn to talk, you're rehearsing a speech that will fix their problem. Guys, you been with me on this? Because that's our job. Somebody comes to us with a problem, we've got to fix it. We'll get what the nature of the problem is after one sentence, and then we're off in our own world writing the script. You get this? It doesn't move the mountain. What moves the mountain are the words that are not said. And then there may be some silence. And silence is uncomfortable, because that's the time we have to engage our script. If you must, and if you've been listening, and you've sought to understand, to move the mountain from hence to yonder place, you might try, if only, to say, "Tell me more," until there's no more to tell. And guess what? Maybe nothing's changed except kinship and empathy and understanding, which does move mountains. Sometimes the words that move mountains are the words that are not said, and the script that is not read, and the effort to fix is put on hold until we fully understand. Which is not to say there aren't words to be said, especially when we're trying to deal with some of the seemingly intractable issues in our lives. Issues especially those that separate us or that seem to separate us. We had a special presbytery meeting called a couple months ago. I didn't want to go, except I felt compelled to go because they needed to hear something I had to say. I came there with a rehearsed speech. And I patiently waited for my turn to speak, and then by and large interrupted somebody else because I couldn't wait any longer. And I let them have it. I told them what I thought about the issue, about what I thought was dividing us in ways that were especially difficult, especially now, and that we should seek to find common ground. And then I went home and I felt like I needed to delouse. Because emotionally, I made my point, but I didn't listen to my own advice. Part of that speech was a retelling of what it's like to be the minister in Post-Texas, where perhaps the most popular channel on cable news is Fox. And I remember somebody asking me a while back, "Hey, Jerry, you ever watch Fox News?" And my answer rather glibly was, "Not even at gunpoint." And then I made the point in the speech that that doesn't prevent the minister and the congregation from moving forward, being effective, being useful. We spend time in common ground. Which, of course, I had completely lost in my own sense of authority and entitlement in that speech. That's why I needed a shower. But the point is well taken, and these are the words that move mountains between people intractably separated by ideology. They are, in fact, the hardest words I know how to put together in the English language. You make a point. You make a point. Not a very intelligent one. Wait a minute. Time to take another shower. You make a point. And we do. Even though we don't necessarily find it completely explanatory in our own frame of reference. Until you're able to say with those with whom you disagree, you make a point. Invite them to see the other side of what's often the same coin. All you have between you is a mountain. You make a point. The words that move that mountain from hence to yonder place, or at least move enough of it away so you can find common ground on which to stand. Tell me more. You make a point. Use your words. And here's another one. We do unto others and get under their skin and cause them pain. But others do unto us too, don't they? Remember the last time that happened? And you sat there with righteous indignation? Any time now, come make it right. Except we know. And maybe this is a guy thing too. Have you had the experience of just how unbelievably fast it can happen that something you said turns the moment between someone you love very much in you and who loves you very much back, just turns it to trash for like a week? Has that ever happened, guys, in the front row here? It's unbelievable how quickly that can occur. And that's what we remember in a helpful way. The next time someone has done that unto us, you know what? We're capable of this too. And especially with those who love us more than we deserve, who love us not if but anyway. Maybe the words that move the mountain, especially when you have been done unto, when you are righteously entitled to indignation, you rather say, maybe out loud or by your actions, you know what? I'm still here. And we're still us. Now, there are limits to this. There are relationships that are infected by abuse and criminality where being still here does more harm than good. But that isn't what I'm talking about, because that isn't what hits us most of the time. This is the stuff that puts a mountain between people who truly do love each other deeply and who will continue to love each other deeply. But it falls to the one who has been wronged, often as not, to move the mountain with these words, "I'm still here. Let's move forward. Tell me more. You make a point. I'm still here." You'd like to think that, like David Copperfield, making the motorcycle disappear, it just goes like that, but it doesn't. Actually, the whole starting point of these series of ideas that I'm talking about this morning came from having read to Wanda in the hospital a meditation on this text. And if ever anyone is seeking to move a mountain, she's certainly in that situation. But the meditation said it's not a matter of bulldozing the thing away. It's rather a matter of taking a small wheelbarrow and a shovel and one scoop at a time, moving it away with your words. One scoop at a time. Tell me more. You make a point. I'm still here. Put another way, and we will experience it in just a second, where at the Last Supper, Jesus took bread, gave thanks and broke it, and said all of those things in one sentiment: "My body broken for you, my blood shed for you." Oh, and by the way, for them too. It's not just for you, it's for you all. And like it or not, that draws us together where we find common ground in the remnant of the mountain that has been moved by Jesus' words: body broken, blood shed, for you and for all people. Use your words. And nothing will be impossible for you either. Amen.